So I'm going to talk a little bit tonight about working with emotions, kind of touching on some of the basics of our practice in working with emotions. Oftentimes when people come to the Dharma, the thing that they're most interested in or concerned with about is their emotions. The thing that they want to talk about and learn about is their emotions, and rightly so. And rightly so, our relationship with our emotions has a lot to do with how we are in this life and in this world, has a lot to do with whether we suffer or we experience happiness in our lives, greater happiness, happiness inside, happiness in the heart. So one thing that I want to emphasize, I'll emphasize a few things, but I'll begin by emphasizing that in our practice, what we're concerned with is our relationship to our emotions. So in our practice, we're not looking to change our emotions. We're not looking to get rid of any emotions that we have. We're not looking to change anything. We're looking to change our relationship to our emotions. So that's very important. That's very important. Because once we start to think that we need to change emotions or the way, you know, or the emotions that we're experiencing, then we're not in the position that we need to be in to understand them and to have a skillful relationship to them. So, you know, the supposition, of course, is that our relationship to our emotions for most of us, much of the time, is unskillful. So what does that mean, to have an unskillful relationship with our emotions? When the Buddha talked about emotions, they all sort of came under the category of aversion and desire, but there's a lot of things that come under that category: anxiety and fear and dissatisfaction and disappointment and worry and apprehension and longing and lust, all those things. So what does it mean to have an unskillful relationship to our emotions? We can't really develop a skillful relationship to our emotions until we first see what our relationship to our emotions is. And then we can try to do something about the way that it is and have a more skillful relationship to the emotions. So the first element in having an unskillful relationship to the emotions, and really the most important aspect of an unskillful relationship to emotions that we need to consider, is the way that we're unaware of our emotions. Okay? So for the much of the time, we're just not aware of the emotions that are arising, that have arisen, the emotions that we're holding on to. So the first thing in our practice is to learn to be aware of our emotions, our emotional states. I always kind of like to talk about things on a macrocosmic or a global level, and then a day-to-day, moment-to-moment level. We may be, usually by the time people get to meditation, or if they've been in it for a while in this practice, they sort of maybe have a sense of what emotions have a tendency to arise for them, and what emotions that they may get overwhelmed by or drowned in that cause them suffering, or they may not. And I know for a lot of us, perhaps for much of our lives, which we just haven't been aware of our emotions. I know, for years and years and years, I wasn't aware of my emotions. I always tell the story, and people have heard it before, of, a year or so before, maybe a couple of years before I came into this practice, in my early 30s, and maybe about 30 years ago, sitting in the bank, you know, and waiting to meet with, you know, somebody from the bank, and you know, sitting in the waiting room, and there being some magazines there, you know, and I picked up a magazine, and there was an article in the magazine about anger, and I started reading it, and it was like, you have a lot of anger. It was like, I wasn't aware of it. I mean, it was one of those aha moments. I mean, I was a very, very, very angry person. Very angry person, but I wasn't aware of it at all. I mean, I was a very angry person, but I wasn't aware of it. I was an unaware person. And it was just, it was one of those, again, one of those aha moments, one of those moments of real insight where I was just bowled over by that realization. So much anger. You're so angry so much of the time. And that was good, of course, because that was one of the things, amongst many things, that got me on a path to do something about the things about myself that needed to be changed. So that was a blessing that I picked up that magazine. So, you know, there may be things about ourselves in terms of our emotional qualities that we aren't aware of, just in general. So it's something to kind of reflect on. You know, I mean, I was fortunate, you know, that I read that article. You know, I was fortunate that for various reasons, you know, I began to get a glimpse of the things about myself and my mind and my emotional states that were not helping me in my efforts to find happiness in my life. To some extent, there were people in my life who were able to point that out to me, you know, in a compassionate way. I mean, ideally, we have people like that in our lives. It's a very hard thing, you know, to tell somebody the truth about them. So, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing. It's usually better if we kind of find out for ourselves. Most people don't want to hear that they're angry or this or that or the other thing. And of course, you have to rely on a wise being. But it's certainly something for us to reflect on. And certainly as we come to the Dharma, and our practice starts to develop, you know, it's like, this is where soul searching, you know, I always talk about sometimes you have to do a little soul searching. What are the things that I need to really address? Yeah. What are the things that I really need to address? So we may, on this sort of macrocosmic level, not be aware of our emotions, the emotions that plague us, the emotions that are such integral parts of our days. And then, of course, in any given day, there may be emotions that are arising that we're not aware of. I mean, that can happen in any given day. You know, sometimes, you know, I'll be kind of going through the day and, you know, I might have a vague sense of like, I'm not really happy, you know, and then, you know, at some point I'm aware that, you know, there's some anxiety there. But think, you know, we can, you know, I mean, that's kind of a subtle emotion. Of course, it's very painful. And, you know, it has a tremendous impact and effect on our lives. Sometimes the even emotions can be even stronger that we're not so aware of. Sometimes they're very subtle and they're so ingrained, like something like anxiety. Sometimes when we get caught up in something, we don't see it. We're blinded. I mean, that's one of the marks of being caught in an emotion, and it's one of the marks of a relationship to emotions that's unskillful, is that we become blinded by it. You know, we're so angry we don't even realize it, or we're so upset about something, or we're so worried about something. We just don't have enough space because we're in it. We just don't have enough space. So our practice is about becoming more and more aware. we'll talk a little bit more about this, you know, in terms of the skillful relationship. What I would say is, even just in a sitting like this today, you know, I had some pretty good concentration, got into the breath, a nice easeful breath, got into the body, and you know, I mean, we've talked about this so much, but I could have at that point said, okay, I'm just gonna stay right there. This feels good. There was a mental quality that was impinging on me that I wasn't aware of. There was an anxiety that was fairly subtle you know, at first I wasn't aware of, and at first I was putting it to the side, but, you know, it was incumbent on me in my efforts to find a greater happiness at some point in the meditation, once I had concentration, to begin to investigate what might be there that I might not be aware of. So, you know, that's on the most subtle level. That's on the most subtle level. And we talk about that at the beginning of the meditation, like, become aware of what your mind is like when you sit down to meditate. Maybe there is a resistance to the meditation or an aversion to wanting to do it. So we're training, it's part of our training to be aware of what the mind is like. So, you know, an unskillful relationship begins in awareness, in unawareness, not being aware of the emotion. And then we could say the evolution of an unskillful relationship to an emotion is that we, because in large part of our unawareness, our lack of awareness, we act out on it. We act out on our emotions. So really, you know, when we're unaware, we either act out on our emotions or we repress. You know, those are unskillful ways of relating to emotions. Either acting, you know, being unaware and acting out and or repressing, and then, you know, we want to develop a skillful relationship. Something else, being aware, and something else beside acting out or repressing. So what does it mean to act out? What does it mean to act out? Act out is acting out, and repressing is like acting in. Acting in. So what does it mean to act out? Well, think about action. What does the Buddha talk about when he talks about action? Three kinds of action: mental action, verbal action, and physical action. So a lot of our acting out with emotions is in verbal action, in thinking. So we're angry about something and we pursue in thinking about the thing that we're angry about. We pursue that thinking. We allow ourselves just to go down those rivers of thought. We're anxious about something that we have to do, and we act out by engaging in thinking. You know, when acting out becomes strong, you know, we proliferate. You know, the Pali word is papancha. We haven't talked about that word in a long time, but we proliferate. The apex of papancha is, you know, obsession. You know, we're just obsessed with thinking about whatever it is. Sometimes it's something that happened previously. We did something that was unskillful, and, you know, we're caught in thoughts of self-loathing. So that's one form of acting out. Thinking, particularly thinking that's proliferated, papancha. The second form, and these sort of are hierarchical in terms of their karmic retribution on a negative scale. The second form is verbal action. So we're angry about something and we say something. You know, we're have a resentment towards somebody and we say something towards them that's unskillful. Sometimes that may be more subtle. We talk about this a lot when people are kind of going through a life change or something. You know, somebody's going through a life change, a divorce or a death or change of a job or something, and there's anxiety or worry about that, and there's a lot of talking about it, you know, a lot of talking about it. So, you know, one of the things that we always talk about is be careful who you hang out with and talk about it, and, you know, because that just, you know, is just another form of acting out and creating more suffering. And then the third form of acting out would be physical, So we have an aversion to somebody, you know, and we take some kind of a violent action. I mean, that's pretty harsh. Hopefully we don't do that. But there's other things that we can do in terms of our deeds that may be coming out of a certain emotional state. So and that really is, you know, when we're at a level of karmic retribution that is most pernicious for us. I had a beautiful example of these three one day when I was waiting online in the grocery store. Somebody, a couple of people ahead of me, and the line was really slow, and the cashier was really slow, and I was getting angry. You know, why is she taking so long? Da 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 da. Finally got my turn up there. I put my stuff down. Person in front of me was going so slow. She was going so slow. She was like, "What's going on?" And then so that was the, you know, anger and acting out mentally. And then I said something. You know, what the hell's going on here? You know, can you move this line a little faster? You know? And I was, and, you know, I mean, this all happened really fast. And then I just grabbed my stuff angrily, put it back in my basket, and went to another line. Physical action, right? So it was all right there in that little tableau. Mm-hmm. Verbal action, anger, mental action, said something, and then I took a physical action. So we aren't aware and we act out on our emotions, and, you know, it causes suffering, and it causes, you know, when we take action is what forms karma. Action is karma. So mental action generates a certain level of karma, verbal and physical action even more. So, you know, if you've had that kind of an experience on the line at the grocery store, chances are you'll continue to have that kind of experience on the line at the grocery store, unless you start to bring some awareness to what you're doing and begin to develop a more skillful relationship to your emotions. The other way that we relate to emotions unskillfully is we repress. So, you know, that's kind of more subtle, right? You know, repression, sublimation, you know, is talked about a lot in psychology, you know, Freudian psychology. So, one of the ways that we repress, of course, is through engaging in sense pleasure. So, you know, we're feeling a lot of anxiety about something that we have to do, and, you know, we spend a lot of time at the refrigerator eating, you know, or we spend a lot of time watching TV, you know, as a way of pushing down what we're feeling. You know, Freud talked about, you know, the emotions of lust and desire, which are, you know, all of these emotions are just natural human emotions, And when we repress them, you know, they're going to come up someplace else. So, you know, they may come up in you know, ways that we seek to attain status in the world, have developed some kind of a social identity. Freud believed that, you know, all culture was a sublimation of sexual desire. I think he was pretty right about that. You know? So, the meditation teacher who's got a lot of anger and anxiety, you know, can repress that by becoming the meditation teacher, or the meditation student who is plagued by aversion and desire and all these things can repress that by becoming the meditation student. Oh, I'm a meditation student now. Or we can even use meditation to repress, right? We can use meditation to repress. So what does it mean to have a skillful relationship to our emotions? Well, first of all, to be aware. To be aware. So in order to be aware of our emotions, we need to have some kind of a relationship to them that's dualistic. So it's like we're completely in it, we can't see it. So we have to create a relationship to our emotions in all of our experience where we're able to observe it. So what we learn to do in meditation is create a vantage point from which we can observe our experience, and that's the breath. Okay, so we create a center with the breath, and you know the Buddha likened it to a vantage point, like going up on a tower, a place from which we can look at our human experience. So, you know, I mean, if you want to think about it, just in terms, and you know, and this is not conceptual. You know, if we have awareness of the breath here and an easeful breath here and an emotion like anxiety or fear or anxiety arises here, you know, then we have some kind of duality by which we're able to look at the emotion and see the emotion, separate it out and look at it. So, you know, having a strong center. And, you know, the stronger the emotion is, the stronger the center it is, because we have to be able to keep that emotion. See, that's equanimity. That's equanimity. And it's the Buddha on the night of his awakening, besieged with aversion and desire, but having space, because he was practicing breath meditation and he had equanimity. So, you know, so much of what we do in meditation is, you know, putting ourselves in position so that we can have a skillful relationship to our experience, including our emotions. So, you know, it's one of the things that is, you know, difficult in meditation, Dharma practice in terms of emotions is that if you want to work skillfully with emotions, that means having a skillful relationship with them, which means that you need to have a dualistic relationship with them, which means essentially that you need to have a strong enough center from which you can relate to your emotions. So, you know, I was talking about this on the retreat last weekend. You know, if we, you know, so it's a catch-22, right? You know, people come to meditation, you know, and they have all these emotional states that are challenging. But you can't really work with them very effectively in meditation until you've developed a center, a strong center. It could take a few years to develop a strong center. Okay, that's great. You know, I'm developing a strong center. But if the emotions are really strong, it can be hard to develop a strong enough center. So this is where the disclaimer comes in of, you know, usually, I mean, Jack Kornfield talks about this a lot. Usually we need to work on other levels with emotions to be able to begin to develop a more skillful relationship and a wise relationship for them. You know, that at the very least will augment what we're doing in meditation, but probably more so putting us in a position so that we can start to develop enough concentration and enabling us, you know, in those two, three, four, five, 10 years that it takes to develop a strong center to begin to work skillfully with our emotions and to alleviate some of our suffering. So, you know, this is where for many of us therapy comes in and other models. I always say, like, the therapist is like the breath. You know, the therapist gives you that duality. A good therapist gives you, you know, that's sort of a good definition of, for me, of a therapist. A good therapist gives you that duality. I really watch out, like, when the therapist starts stepping, you know, into that space, you know, starts having an opinion about your emotions and things, you know, for me. The first thing in order to be aware is that we need a center. And, you know, as I said, once we have a center in the body, then we're able to be aware of the emotions in the body. So in order to be aware of our emotional states, we need to have a body awareness so that we can be aware of the emotions as they manifest physically as form in the body. So, you know, I mean, that's in many ways, I mean, that's what I tell beginners, you know, it's like, just start to be able to be aware of emotions when they arise and feel them in the body. You know, start to develop that skill. Start to develop that skill. Because think about it, you know, I mean, we need to work with our thinking. You know, you need to work a lot with our thinking. We talked about this last week. But once you're in the thinking, you're already acting out on the emotions. It's really hard to start to get to some space with them. Now you can see thinking arise, and if you have strong equanimity, come to the breath and be aware of the emotion in the body. A lot of emotions, well, all emotions when they arise, arise in the body, and some things don't really come to the place of thinking right away. I mean, you could be anxious all day, you know, probably you are thinking about some of the things that you're anxious about, but, you know, there could be that felt sense of anxiety throughout the course of the day. We could be in a knot, you know, because a part of that physical experience of anxiety is just that physically it feels unpleasant. So it's crucial that we develop this ability to be mindful of the mind as it manifests physically in the body. You know? So we use the breath as an anchor, and we're aware of the arising of emotions as they manifest, you know, and if you want to get neuroscience-y, you know, along the vagus nerve. Okay, because this is where, you know, neuroscience has shown that this mental quality, this element of brain, manifests the receptors in the vagus nerve. So, you know, what I would try to do always is to try to have some center as I go throughout the course of the day, and have some sensitivity at least to the body, so that I could be aware of what my mental state is. Or, for instance, in this meditation, you know, I had a beautiful full body awareness, a sense of ease, and then come back to the breath at one point and focus there, but have a sensitivity to the body, particularly this part of the body, and just, you know, what's there that may be impinging on my stillness. Oh, there's a little anxiety here. Okay. Begin to look at that. And of course, you know, that's how you really begin to understand emotions and develop a skillful relationship to them, and concentration will deepen. That anxiety has been impinging on the concentration. So we are aware of the arising of emotions. We have a center, we're able to feel them in the body, and then our relationship that's skillful to emotions is like, so it's a relationship. We're able to be with the experience of emotion. So we're able to be with the experience of the emotion, as opposed to when it arises, wanting to get rid of it. So a lot of times when people start to develop awareness and sensitivity to the emotion, their next movement is, I got to get rid of this. And of course that makes sense, because, you know, that's our habitual way of relating to our emotional experience, wittingly or unwittingly, is we want to get rid of it. It's painful. I mean, it's sort of a natural way of, you know, karmically natural, certainly, of relating to emotions that isn't useful, wanting to get rid of it. there's a difference between putting something to the side and wanting to get rid of it. The biggest problem that people have with emotions, or one of the big problems, is that people are desperate to get rid of it, you know? So that wouldn't be a very good relationship to have with somebody, you know? If you think about, the Buddha had a relationship with Mara, you know, your relationship with your emotions, it's not like you're gonna go camping with the emotion, but you have to have a relationship with it. It's like a relative that, you know, is difficult, or somebody at work, you know? It's like, can't get rid of them, you know? It's like, you know, wanting to get rid of that person isn't useful. You could put them to the side. So this is something that we really have to watch out for, is that movement in the mind wanting to get rid of, and instead allow the emotion to be there. We have a lot of ideas about, these emotions that, particularly as we get on our high horse of being a meditator, that we shouldn't be experiencing them, that there's something wrong with them. I always tell the story about, a student years ago who came and, was having a challenging experience with one of their kids and was feeling a lot of anger, and I said to them, open up to the anger. And they said, how can I? That's my child. I can't have anger towards my child. That's your natural human experience. That's what we need to do, is to allow that experience of emotion to be there. Once we can kind of get to that point, again, to be able to do that, you have to have enough of a center where you're not desperate to get rid of it, because you have a sense of ease and well-being inside. You know that you can always go back to the easeful breath. You're not desperate to get rid of it. So typically an emotion will come up for me, and my first instinct is to want to get rid of it. I see that, and can you just be with it? I can be with it. It's not usually a problem at that point. It's just that, habitually I want to get rid of it. We think that we shouldn't be experiencing these emotions, but they're a natural part of our human experience. And this is what it means to be human. You've been given these emotions. Your job is, embrace your humanity and learn to develop a skillful relationship to the emotions, and learn to make the most of your human experience. It includes, anger and fear and desire and all of these emotional states. So what's important is how we relate to them. So once we, really have this quality of equanimity, then there can be an acceptance. Acceptance is a function of equanimity. There can be an acceptance. I can accept that this is here and allow this to be here. We can just kind of assert that. Really what we're doing is inclining to equanimity. So there's a quality of acceptance as part of the skillful relationship. That person comes in the room, it's like, no, they shouldn't be here. No, they're here. And there's a quality of tranquility. See, all of this comes from developing the breath, right? So, it's crucial that we have, a center that's tranquil. It's crucial that we have an element of tranquility. It's like any relationship. We want to be able to meet it with calmness. So calmness is crucial. Calmness is crucial. And there's space, right? There's space. So, there's calmness, and then there's the anxiety or the anger, but there's room for both of those because there's enough space there. So then we can look at, when there's space, then we can look at the emotion calmly and begin to understand it in our relationship to it. But you can't look at or be with anger or anxiety in an angry and anxious way. That would be like a surgeon, I always say, having, being nervous and their hand moving a lot. There's a difference between the surgeon and her hand and her scalpel and the tumor. so there's this quality of space, you know, where we can calmly and objectively look at the experience of the emotion. And of course, the metaphor the Buddha used is like one person looking at another person, or a person sitting looking at a person lying down, or a person standing looking at a person sitting. So we're the observer. We're the observer. We're the observer. And from that place of, you know, and just developing that kind of a relationship to, and the more that we can develop that relationship to it, you know, we look at it, I mean, wisdom, you know, the Buddha said wisdom will happen if you have that kind of space, you know, as easily as a strong man knocking over a cup of water filled to the brim. Our job is to create a skillful relationship and wisdom will happen. Or like Tom Jeff says, do concentration, wisdom will happen. But, you know, we need to learn to frame our observation in an effort to be able to relate it to our natural wisdom and what we can experience on a felt level, so asking questions can be useful. Well, what is this experience of emotion? What is it? Oh, it's a tingling, a tightness, a little shape, a color, a texture. What's it like when I hold on to it? Can I see that I'm holding on to it? I mean, that's a good question. Can I see that I'm holding on to it? What's it like when I'm not holding on to it? Do I have to hold on to it? I mean, if we want to get on the more advanced levels of observation, seeing the impermanent and not self-nature, seeing that the emotion is empty, the Buddha said, it's just foam. It's just foam. It's experience rising and falling in our field of experience. So all of that, you know, it's not a relationship. We're not going camping 5 to 10 seconds. You know? It's a relationship where we're being with and accepting and opening to and observing for 5 or 10 seconds, and then we go back to the breath. So it's very important not to try to take that relationship too far. Just like, you know, I mean, I don't care how calm a person you are, you know, if you hang out with the person that's most difficult for you for an extended period of time, it's going to be really hard. You could probably do it for 5 minutes. Or the emotion, 5 seconds. So we come back to the breath, and again, there's this experience. So this is so crucial. I mean, this, when you start to be able to be mindful of your emotional qualities in this way, then things really start to change. And I'm saying, what I mean is when there's duality, when you can really see that the breath is here and the experience of anxiety or anger is here, you know, and you're able to be really clear and really see that quality of separation and duality. Then you begin to start to realize that, you know, these emotional states are not all of your experience. They're just part of your experience, rising and falling, just like the tingling in the knee, just like the itchy head, just like the feeling of hunger. It's all just part of the play of experience. And this is really the beginning of understanding, you know, our capacity to have a skillful relationship, a dualistic relationship to emotion, and the beginning of our understanding that the emotions aren't us, you know, they're not self, you know, they're just part of our play of experience. But, you know, when we're in a really in an emotion, you know, that's sort of what defines, you know, obsession. I'm angry, I'm anxious, we're identified with it. So when you can begin to develop this kind of separation, we begin to understand that it's not who we are. We begin to experience a non-identified relationship. So Nagarjuna, you know, the Buddhist sage, said, you know, I bow to Buddhas who ease fixation and teach contingency. So we ease fixation by developing a duality, and we see that this experience isn't who we are. It's just part of a play of karmic experience coming and going. So this is our practice. These are things that we talk about. This is such an important part of what it means to be on this path of mindfulness. And it's such an important example. It's more than an example. It really shows how important meditation is what I'm saying, because this is what we need to do. But in order to do this, we need to develop our meditation practice. We need to develop equanimity. The Buddha said we need to develop jhana. So it really shows what our potential is for understanding, for having a skillful relationship to our experience if we develop our meditation practice. So let's just close our eyes for a minute.